He presents The Motion Show, Radio 4's answer to serious debating, with your chairman, Dr. Phil Hammond.
Hello and welcome to the finest example of petty political point scoring outside the House of Fraser. On my left, the dynamic duo of Rona Cameron and Neil Ashdown.
Hello.
And opposing them on my right, their formidable foes, Clive Coleman and John Maloney.
Hello. Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, the speakers. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be deciding which of our two teams can use reason and rhetoric in the most persuasive way. And failing that, I've got a bag full of syringes and a very large needle. So let's get on with it. Here's our first motion. This House believes that everyone should have a therapist. Miss Rona Cameron, would you please take the lectern and propose the motion? This House believes that everyone should have a therapist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, you all have a dentist, I presume, a doctor, I presume, and if you have a car, then no doubt you have a car mechanic. Then why not have a therapist? If, for example, your car does need a service, is broken down, you wouldn't take it along to a friend who knows something about cars. You'd take it to an expert on cars. So when we find ourselves in a dysfunctional emotional state, what better than to take it to a professional, a therapist? As British people, I understand how we find it very hard to break through that stiff upper lip exterior and admit that beneath us all, we are vulnerable and we have a lot of pain locked in from our childhood, ladies and gentlemen. That we need to
point,
deal
point
with.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Point of order. Not everyone has a dentist. I know it was a long time ago, but it just hit me, and you know, and it's really due to savage cuts in the NHS budget. And
point of order, there's also another reason that not everybody has a dentist, and that's just plain naked fear.
Right.
I agree with my colleague. An excellent point there.
Carry on.
Basically, just let me quickly comment on that. I can only feel that he is neglecting himself, and that process should be looked at through therapy. Now, for example, let's talk about why we need therapy. Okay, we could say stress. I'm sure we'll all admit to living in this busy age that we live in that we all have stress. You just need to look at the unhappy commuters on the tube. And sometimes, have you ever been on a tube and somebody's burst into tears and nobody says anything, ladies and gentlemen? Don't you wish you could just reach out there and touch that fellow human being with a genuine act of kindness? No, you don't. Why are you afraid to express your emotions? That's an even bigger case for going to therapy. Four stressful things in life, we know what they are. Divorce, death, moving house, and trying to change the duvet by getting the corners into that bit. That's really bad when your blood sugar level's low. But everybody needs to go to a therapist. I mean, I actually went to see the film Saving Private Ryan the other week, and I was so upset that I couldn't continue with my life that week. And I put that down to displaced grief from my childhood, ladies and gentlemen. Things I have to deal with. And I understand you don't want to be like Americans. You see it as largely an American trait to attend therapy. And perhaps being a bit tight-fisted and British, you're afraid to part with the money. That's always another big thing opposing therapy. Oh no, let's not pay a therapist £25 a week when I could bore my friends stupid with my egocentric ramblings. Well, you won't have your friends for very long if that's your attitude. £25 to £35 a week is nothing to maintain a healthy spiritual and emotional state for you to strive to a happier place in your lives.
Point
Ladies and gentlemen,
order.
I urge you to support me in the motion that everyone needs a therapist. Thank you.
Mr. Maloney, what was the point of order you
Point of
to
order, £25 to £35 a week. To some people, that is their whole unemployment benefit.
Can I answer that, please, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You can also get therapy on the NHS, and you can do it on a sliding scale. Most therapists operate at that.
Do you get it quicker than a hip replacement?
Yes. And the amount that people spend on escapist devices to try and bring themselves happiness, like alcohol, shopping and drugs, could be spent better with helping themselves in a healthy manner.
We've heard your fabulous motion. Mr. Coleman, I fear...
You speak to my mother about that, who is also my wife. Call me
yes, repressed. Mr. Coleman, I fear you may have cemented your own defeat already, but would you now please step forward and oppose the motion? This House believes everyone should have a therapist.
Indeed I will, Mr. Chairman, and learned colleagues opposite. Members of this House, let's just examine what therapists do. Basically, they get you to talk about yourself, and they relate everything to sex. So we might as well just call them blokes in that case. But let me paint a picture to you of the world as it would be if everyone had a therapist. Imagine, for instance, if the weatherman on TV had a therapist. Well, it's going to be a sunny start to the day, but not in my heart, where there'll be a darkness, a hint
point
of morbid...
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, point of order, Mr.
I've never heard a weatherman talk like that. I don't know which weatherman that is.
That's Richard Edgar on the Breakfast Weather News.
Oh, point of order.
You want to get out of bed earlier.
I'll take it back. That was Richard Edgar. Well done.
Yeah, it's in. Those in the audience who believe that was Richard Edgar, say aye.
Aye.
Those who don't, say nay.
No.
See Suzanne Charlton. Carry on, sir.
I thought it was Gary Lineker.
Carry on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And as I was saying, a hint of morbid self-loathing later on in the afternoon and just a sprinkling of suicidal hysteria. We look at the chart there. We can see that tomorrow it'll be a little colder in an emotional sense. So wrap yourself up in a couple of layers of introspective self-doubt. Don't make love to your mother or kill your father, and that's all from me. So it would be terrible. And yeah, take our top sportsmen, members of this House, and we can't have them in therapy. We have them in therapy. Or in heresy.
Mr. Chairman, Gaz is in therapy and it's helping him.
Top sportsman we were talking of here.
Gaz is actually drying out in an alcoholic centre, I think. Not,
he's getting counselling therapy there as well.
Yeah, that's called put the bottle down.
He is getting a form of therapy, so I feel I am going to uphold Miss Cameron there. Carry on.
Let's just carry on and look at this nightmare vision. You know, our top sportsman, you get Nasser Hussain. In a crucial test match, he steals a single, then feels guilty about it and goes back. Players would be scared to put their shirts over their heads and celebrate in case they were seen to be blinding themselves to the emotional reality of success. It would be awful. And the simple things of life would become fantastically laborious. Miss Cameron talked about a mechanic. You take your car in to have a tyre change. The mechanic puts his arm around you and he says, okay, let's look at this tyre together. And not only that, he says, you're being very passive-aggressive and really, the change should come from you. Mr. Chairman, it would...
Well, order, Mr. Chairman, mechanics don't talk like that. They don't say anything, they just go, no.
Point of order, I think therapists and mechanics are very similar because they both listen to you and after 5 minutes they go, it's going to cost you.
Yes, indeed.
Anything more to say?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do have more to say. If everyone had a therapist, then who would give therapy to the therapist? They'd have to give therapy to themselves. It wouldn't serve any useful purpose, but the money would come in handy.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Point of order, Mr. Asher.
Teenage boys have been giving therapy to themselves for years.
And has it succeeded?
Yes.
He's wearing glasses.
Mr. Chairman.
Snap. Yes, point of order upheld.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't aware we were talking about that kind of hands-on therapy, but let me finish with one final point, and that's this, Mr. Chairman, that if we were to allow everyone to have a therapist, all human activity would crumble into a dust bowl of self-questioning. No one needs a therapist. I urge this House to regain control of their soul and reject this motion.
Thank you very much. Clive Coleman. Do you know, Miss Cameron, of any scientific evidence that counselling or therapy works?
I distrust science. I'm talking about...
You distrust science?
Yeah, I do.
Right.
In terms of... I don't think a scientific approach relates at all to an emotional well-being. I think it's to do with communication, and I think that's nothing to do with science.
And do you find...
I wouldn't look to science.
You find
strange, repressed Dr. Ways.
Easy, Tiger. Do you know, I found out the other day, there are 30,000 junior doctors working in the UK and 90,000 therapists. That's one to kill the patients and three to ask the relatives how they feel. It's wonderful, isn't it, John? Why can't everyone have a therapist? Understanding your emotional needs. Who else is going to do that for you?
My mate, Barry.
Right.
No, I think my friends are my therapist.
But I've never seen John with any friends in the whole time I've known him.
Right. I think we've exhausted that one, but before I ask the audience here to vote, let's see what the previous audience had to say about it. This one's from Damien in Leeds. I've had a few nurses and they weren't bad. Time for the vote. Members of the House, all those who agree with Rona that everyone should have a therapist, say aye.
Aye.
Tight, repressed, in denial, you'll be sorry, heart attacks, cancer later in life.
And all those who don't, say nay.
Nay!
A very sane victory there for Clive Coleman and John Maloney. Moving swiftly on, the next motion is this House believes public schools should be razed to the ground. Mr. John Maloney, would you please come to the front of the class and propose the motion this House believes public schools should be razed to the ground.
Chairman, heist. Public schools have done more damage to the social fabric of our society than the plague, two world wars, TB, syphilis and Vanessa Feltz all rolled together. If we are ever going to attempt to achieve anything vaguely approaching the idyll of a classless society, our first task is to eradicate a class from society who, even given the privilege of a fairly decent education, obviously have no class at all. The detritus that is spewed through the gates of these fine institutions slimes its way to the wine bars of Clapham and Fulham, stopping off to buy a Range Rover V6 with leather interior and bull bars, because there's lots of rhinos in SW4, picking up some beige or green corduroy on the way, ordering the chocolate brown Labrador, and finally, buying the book, which is the Bible for the public school inbred. How to be just too loud in any social situation at all and remain totally oblivious to the fact, even though you are surrounded by the great unwashed who are extremely tempted to punch your lights out. Public schools are everything that is wrong about Britain. They are class-ridden feeders into the army, industry, and fine institutions such as Ox and Bridge and Durham Uni, or as it's commonly known, Oxbridge Clearance. I don't feel anger towards public school boys and girls. I pity them. Let's, in the fine tradition of the film If, take another look at our public schools. Close them down? No. Some bright spark might reopen them. A few sticks of gelignite should do the trick. And the children who have just attended them, they can come down to earth where the air is less rare, but just a bit more normal, and mix with people with real class. The people who are trying to do it for themselves without the aid of an old school tie or funny handshake. The revolution starts here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Ms. Rona Cameron, your chance to shine. Would you please take the lectern and oppose the motion? This House believes that public schools should be razed to the ground.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, on the House. I strongly oppose the idea that public schools should be razed to the ground. I absolutely love perpetuating the class system. I think it's great. I love having a chip on my shoulder. It's so handy to argue with people at dinner parties. As a working class person, it's excellent. You go to a dinner party, you wind up a middle class person and feel so guilty of their class status that they can't argue back because they know they're wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So without public schools, this system would not be perpetuated, and therefore people like me would have no spunk and anger. We wouldn't have Monty Python if there wasn't public school. You don't think that they'd be allowed to
Point
carry on the way they did?
Exactly.
Yes? No, I don't think so. I think we all know Monty Python. They've started a lot of things, John. I know you're a big Python fan. I also know that you're working hard at gigs at the moment to save up to send your daughter, who's just been born a few months ago, to public school. Now, let's look at the type of people that go to public schools. I mean, they're mostly badly dressed, shabby and smelly with strange wispy hairdos. I'm not just talking about Douglas Hurd. There are other people as well. End of story. Keep public schools.
Thank you very much. Rhoda Cameron. Mr. Coleman, did you go to public school?
I went to a comprehensive school till I was 16. I then went to a public school for 2 years.
You want to keep public schools alive, and yeah, in medical school, we're 50% of the students are from public school. They've spent 16 years of their lives locked in a dormitory. They've never seen anyone black or disabled or elderly or poor or female even.
Yes.
You want to keep the system open and keep the doctors and all the professionals tomorrow having these narrow, sheltered lives.
Well, I think the good thing about public schools is that although you can say that they never have to suffer the problems of poverty or anything like that, they do go to institutions which are inherently psychologically damaging, which I think is kind of balances it quite nicely.
Are you saying it's good to be bullied and beaten after lights out on junior dorm? Is it good, Clive? How can you inflict that damage on young people?
Well, they're rich. They deserve to suffer in other ways. And that's
so
my
you
point.
Want to keep public schools open so the rich may suffer?
Well, they're still going to be rich even if they don't go to public schools. So it's good to have an institution into which they can be sent where they will suffer.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, last one.
Last point of order. Just come back on my learned colleague Miss Cameron's point about the fact that you need public schools in order to have working class angst and all that sort of going on.
Right.
But the point is that if you raise public schools to the ground, which is in fact, can I return to the wording of the motion? That is the wording of the motion. If you raise them to the ground, then all the rich people would have to go to the comprehensive, you see, and then you'd get actually more angst because they'd arrive in their Rolls Royces and so forth. And then a young Liam Gallagher directly confronted with that abuse of wealth would write songs there and then. We'd have an album by mid-morning break.
Fine, OK, let's see what the audience have to say before we put it to the vote. Here's one from Toby, medical student. Toby says, Oh, all my mates went to public school and they're bloody good men. Stinker, shaky, chopper, smelly, Lulu, top-notch guys. There you go. Yeah, there are some bloody good men. And here's one from Charles from Windsor. Are you seriously suggesting that Wills and Harry would go to St. Augustine's Roman Catholic Comprehensive School, Trowbridge? OK, time for the vote. Members of the House, if, like John, you agree that the final bell has tolled for our public schools, say aye.
Aye.
If you want to preserve bish baiting and tuck, say nay.
Yay!
And a resounding success there for Rona Cameron and Neil Ashdown. Hurrah. Now let's get on with the next motion. This House believes that legal lifestyle drugs are the key to human happiness. A contentious issue there. Mr. Clive Coleman, would you please propose the motion? This House believes legal lifestyle drugs are a key to human happiness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen of this House, you're a fat, depressed, bald guy with an erectile dysfunction. Modern life offers you two choices. You can either become the chief executive of Virgin Rail, or with the help of four easy-to-swallow pills, you can become a lean, ecstatic, hairy, genital javelin carrier. That is what legal lifestyle drugs can do for you. And yes, there is a drug that can reduce your body weight by a third. I understand it was one of those incredible chance discoveries by staff in the NHS. Not doctors, apparently. It was someone in the catering department. The substance is called, I think, dimorphoxanthrophene or something, and that apparently is the chemical name for their toad in the hole. And, it's brilliant. You just look at that for a couple of minutes and you can't eat again for the rest of your life. But it's not just the individual drugs. There are fantastic combinations. Just think of what you get if you combined Viagra with Regain, the hair loss drug. Don King is what you get if you combine those two. And he always seems such a genuinely happy and cheerful sort of a guy. There are some, Mr. Chairman, I have to say in warning, there are some contraindications if you take these drugs. If you're taking Viagra, you shouldn't also be taking iron supplements at the time, because apparently the combination can cause you to spin around and face north all the time.
It's point of order, Mr. Ashdown.
No, it doesn't.
Well, my response to that is you should have seen me at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Mr. But these are minor drawbacks, Mr. Chairman. Pharmaceutical companies are developing drugs that can make you seem richer, more sensitive, daring, boyish and likable. You take one and after 5 minutes you start looking like Richard Branson. What I say is, today we have the real drugs nirvana. The mind-bending and expanding drugs dream of the 60s was a mere myth. In the 90s, legal drug culture, there's no bending, there's a bloody enormous amount of expanding, and even Frank LaBeouf's girlfriend gets to curl the hairs on a man's chest. So I urge this House, in the strongest possible terms, to pop a pill, vote for this motion, and we can all pogo home happily.
Thank you very much. Clive Coleman. Neil Ashdown, I fear you've got your work cut out. Could you please take the lectern and oppose the motion that legal lifestyle drugs are the key to human happiness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As has just been said, the term legal lifestyle drugs covers such substances as Prozac, Regain and Viagra. Now, I have no doubt that these chemicals could have some beneficial effects, not least on one of my male friends, whose name I can't reveal, but rest assured he's a miserable, floppy-trousered slaphead. So, let's take Prozac, the original happy pill. Now, I do not want friends who are always smiling. People who smile all the time are not happy. They are Christians. Or they work on children's television. And Prozac can be misused. There are plenty of organisations, as have been referred to, in this country who would love us all to take the stuff. Virgin Trains are very likely to start offering free pills with your rail ticket. And next time you experience a delay because of the wrong kind of train on the line, you won't complain, you'll pop a pill, smile and say, fine, fine, isn't that Richard Branson a lovely man? It's like the soma they take in Brave New World, and we don't need it. As for Regain, well, how many attempts have there been to stamp out the so-called blight of baldness? And how woeful have they proved? About 4 years ago, I sat behind a much-loved DJ and marvelled at the complex interwoven pattern of his hair that gave the back of his head the appearance of a rugby player's plug hole. Sir Elton John has also, he's forsaken eccentric hats for a hairstyle that makes him look like Velma, the ugly bird from Scooby-Doo. Then, of course, the men turn to toupees, and the only people that makes happy are the people who aren't bald. Because they go, ha-ha, toupee. Then, of course, we got Viagra. Now, surely, Mr. Chairman, if you're up to your eyes in debt and you can't get a job, no amount of longevity in the trouser department is going to make up for it, unless you then choose to work in the pornographic industry. And even then, I can tell you there's some pretty stiff competition. No, ladies and gentlemen, no. Happiness is not to be found in any of these ways. Happiness is an empty beach. Happiness is Andy Cole missing a sitter from 2 yards. Happiness is your mum giggling uncontrollably after one too many vodkas. Happiness is getting home at 1 in the morning, it's raining, your bladder's at breaking point, and you actually find your house keys. Happiness... happiness cannot be found in a little brown bottle.
Thank you very much. Neil Ashburn. Would you use... these tablets are all injections, as the impotence cure used to be in injections. They're made harder to take, then people would stop abusing them, don't you, Phil?
Like heroin.
Yes, point well made. Now, Miss Cameron, you're anti-lifestyle drugs, and yet isn't the contraceptive pill the one thing that has given liberation to women a lifestyle drug?
Yes.
Hasn't that made women happy?
Yes, it has. I have nothing to say about that. You're absolutely right.
Hormone replacement therapy, a lifestyle drug. Some would argue. I don't think it should be classified as that, but it's made people happy.
Oh, so I've got to talk about all the women pharmaceutical things.
No, I'm just saying, what's a how would you categorise a lifestyle drug?
Well, I was more concentrating on... I think drugs in general... I think what we should look at is the actual wording of this as well, human happiness. I mean,
right.
I don't think lifestyle drugs make human happiness. I think shopping makes human happiness. Basically, human happiness is achieving long-term goals, a healthy diet, an active social life. That's human happiness. It's nothing to do with a chemically induced state. And all these things anyway that people have talked about, the baldness thing and the impotence, these can all be overcome again by therapy.
But aren't they building blocks on the road to human happiness? Is happiness is the extent to which your aspirations, your achievements and your aspirations match up? If having a wig helps you fulfill your aspirations, doesn't that make you happy?
I think that people have always had these problems, and I think people were years and years ago still unhappy because of these problems and managed to get over them. And we need to look more to a human understanding of a situation, and we need to draw upon the raw materials of our existence, which is basic friendship and communication, not a pill or a puffer.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Let's see what the audience have to say about this. This is one from Joe in Sheffield. If these drugs are any good, they wouldn't be legal. Oh, clever point. Bill says alcohol and tobacco are legal lifestyle drugs, and look at the misery they cause. That said, a pint doesn't taste right without a fag. So, interesting contradiction there, isn't it? And, here's one from Jack in Tunbridge Wells. I've taken some Viagra and locked myself out of the bedroom. Any suggestions? Bear that in mind when you're voting on this. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, all those who agree with the motion and Clive that happiness is a prescription drug say aye.
Aye.
All those who don't think you find happiness in a bottle say nay.
Nay.
A resounding victory for Rona and Neil. Well, now it's that exciting time when we discover whether our speakers can argue without the aid of pre-prepared notes. It's the mystery motion round. Even I don't know what the next motion is going to be, so it's time once again to say, spin the tombola, please, Lulu. Thank you. Lulu's now taking one of the envelopes at random and handing it to me. Thank you, darling. Mystery one, here we go. This house believes that only sad people have pets. This house believes that only sad people have pets. Would you propose that, please, Clive Coleman?
I think it's very sad if you need to project your emotions and your emotional needs onto a goldfish in a goldfish bowl. I mean, the fact is, if you had a little piece of, like, grated carrot just swimming around in there, would you ever know the difference? You're talking about people who are sad enough to project their emotional needs onto a piece of grated carrot.
Point of order, Mr. Cameron.
If that little piece of carrot floating around in the water made someone happy, that wouldn't be sad.
I just ask the audience, those who can tell the difference between a piece of grated carrot and a goldfish say aye.
Aye.
Those who feel they can't say nay. 50-50. Carry on, Mr. Coleman.
People who have pit bulls, I mean, I think they're very sad. You know, people who live in places like Basildon, where even the pit bulls go around in pairs. And they call them by their real names, like Dave. And they go, you know, I'm going down the pub with Dave. And one assumes they have friends, but they don't. They have a pet, a little nasty thing with nasty little teeth around your ankles.
Do you have children?
2. But I don't treat them like pets.
Do you play with them at all? Give them any sort of love or affection?
When No, when I take them out of the wardrobe, they're fine. They're playing nice. Right.
Thank you very much, Clive Coleman. Moving on, Neil Ashton, would you please oppose the motion this House believes that only sad people have pets?
When I grew up, there were fantastic things about having a pet. I mean, nobody can beat the thrill of pushing a fluffy kitten across a polished floor. It's fantastic. Okay, if there were no pets, we'd never have parrots that swear. We'd never have Lassie, we'd never have Champion the Wonder Horse, we'd never have Hammy Hamster's Adventures on the Riverbank, we'd never have Skippy, we'd never have Tom and Jerry. And yes, pets, they do go astray, and they do run wild in the streets, and they do gather in alleys, but that's Top Cat.
Thank you very much. Neil Ashton. John, are you fiercely anti-pet?
The chink in the armour of Neil's argument there was every animal, cartoon-type person-type thing that he just mentioned were all talking animals.
Lassie didn't talk, though. She used non-verbal communication.
No, yes, but people knew what he was saying.
Yes.
People knew.
Yes.
Skippy would just have to go, and they knew there was something wrong. In the same way that a rabbit goes, like that. And it isn't just always a hint of disapproval. Sometimes it's, oh, God, I've lost my lettuce. I mean...
Rona, what are you saying in favour of pets?
Stroking an animal, everybody knows, is good for the heart circulation and improves your general state of well-being, and that surely is a happy thing, not a sad thing. And old people who were once sad and lonely are encouraged to get a pet. An old person's pet is quite popularly a small dog or a budgerigar, and it makes them happy. Mm. That's not sad. And children, it's lovely to teach. You teach children about caring and responsibility. I mean, when we were kids, we'd really look forward to watching Blue Peter, and the presenters would have the animals on there, and there was, sad little Petra died, and then there was Shep, and, without these pets, Blue Peter presenters would have vacuous, empty lives and turned to drugs.
Fine.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
Now, let's put it to vote. Those who believe that only sad people have pets, say aye. Those who disagree that sad people have pets, say nay.
Nay.
A resounding victory for Rona and Neil. That's the end of debating for tonight. It just remains for me to say thank you to all our speakers, to this week's debating donkeys, Clive and John, and tonight's rhetorical racehorses, Rona and Neil. Before we go, we've just had yet another complaint about one of our previous debates. This time it's from Valerie Pike in Maidstone. I wish to complain about the listener who complained that breastfeeding in public is tasteless. It isn't. It's slightly salty and packed with nutrients. Goodbye.
The Motion Show was chaired by Dr. Phil Hammond. The speakers were Neil Ashdown, Rona Cameron, Clive Coleman and John Maloney. It was devised by Bill Dare and the producer was Helen Williams.